Hello, welcome to the Radio Today programme. Trevor Dan fell ill shortly after recording the roundtable this week and the subsequent Radio Today Christmas party. He has assured us it's not alcohol related and he should hopefully be back on his feet by the next programme. Coming up, it's a roundtable discussion recorded at the wonderful Jazz FM studios with the Rig MD Will Jackson, Absolute Radio's Paul Sylvester and BBC Radio 2 and 6 Music's Brett Spencer. I'll be back in a bit with the news from a pub, and David Lloyd is safely in his own studio with the latest radio moments. Let's go.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
I'm Paul Sylvester, the content director of Absolute Radio.
I'm Brett Spencer, the editor for Multiplatform for the BBC Popular Music Networks.
And I'm Will Jackson, managing director of the Radio Independence Group.
Paul, Absolute Radio, how many stations do you run now?
We have 7 stations in the network currently.
And is any of them a Christmas station?
We've not done a Christmas station this year. I think we are leaving that to our friends down the floor and one floor above with Magic. And I think it sounds brilliant.
Well, this is where I wanted to start, which is, I know it's a bit of a... It's a hoary old chestnut, which is when should you start playing your Christmas records? When do we feel comfortable? We're recording this on the 4th of December. So is it the 4th of December?
It is the 4th of December. Yeah. I don't know why this keeps coming up. I mean, my birthday's on the 2nd and then it's Christmas. I thought we've established this down the years.
Okay, so, but is there a kind of cliff edge that we fall off, that we say December the 1st or whatever date it is, it isn't Christmas, and then on such and such another date, wow, it's all full-time wizard.
I'm not sure it's that specific. I know Scott Mills on Radio 1 prides himself on being the first person to play a Christmas record. I think we're driven a lot by sort of retail and what else is going on around us, and certainly decorations and shops and all that, as we know, get earlier and earlier every year, so it just feels more like Christmas earlier than ever.
Oh, what do you think, Will?
I have an interesting theory on this that was posited to me in the pub last night, which was... Christmas is coming earlier and earlier, and it's exactly what you say about it being retail-driven. Now, the majority of programmers are in London, and the Christmas decorations at Oxford Circus go up on something like the 7th of November, almost immediately after Guy Fawkes Night. And if you're coming out of Golden Square or Leicester Square and you see all of that, you go, wow, it's Christmas. Now, the Christmas lights in Braintree were switched on Sunday. Christmas comes later outside London, and some of this dash to get those UK-wide Christmas stations on, I think, could be driven by that London thing of the Christmas lights are up in Oxford Circus, let's go for it.
I think it's also a commercial thing as well, in the fact that obviously as a commercial radio business, we look at when Christmas is and when people are advertising their Christmas products and Christmas services. And that starts kind of the first, second week of November. So I think realistically, when you're looking at the radio industry and when you're looking at when people are feeling Christmassy and getting Christmas messaged, as it were, from clients and from businesses, I think you have to go in line with that as well. And that was realistically the first or second week of November.
Do we still think that Christmas is something that happened in the 1970s? In other words, is it all about Wizard and Slade and John Lennon and Yoko and all of the so-called classic heritage Christmas records? Are those still the basis of everyone's sleigh list?
Well, I think there's also things like the Pogues and Kirsty MacColl. I think Leona Lewis had the last great Christmas record, Mariah Carey. So I think you're right.
But they're all a little bit passé, aren't they? I mean, we wouldn't be playing as many of the contemporary records from when they were hits as we do the Christmas records.
But Coldplay have got Christmas records. Mumford & Sons have done Christmassy records. And you also hear now on stations like Radio 1 and Capital versions by contemporary artists of classic tracks. So you're right in some of what you're saying, I think, in that some of it is old songs, but done in a new way.
And I checked out some of the stations for Christmas.
Oh, hey there, fact fans.
And Christmas FM, when I tuned in randomly yesterday, was playing Ariana Grande, Santa Tell Me. It's a great new 2-3 years old Christmas song. And it sounded really good. And then there was Slade. So That's the balance that you get from some of these
songs. Sorry, Brett.
Although the difference is that it's probably unlikely in 10 years' time that we're going to be playing the Ariana Grande track. Those songs are not becoming the staples that the old classics are. Fair. I don't think we missed you saying sleigh list, Trevor, either.
If we're doing Christmas puns, can I also call out Magic Christmas? More of the songs you'll love.
You'll love.
Very good.
I think they were very proud of that song. And rightly they should be.
Have we heard any good new Christmas records?
The Gwen Stefani album, while I can't really tell you much about it, I have it at home and it's there ready to be played. But Gwen Stefani has a new Christmas album out this year that looks
good. Because I've heard one. Do you want to hear what it is? It's Tom Chaplin's Christmas record.
Oh, from Keane.
The singer out of Off of Keane has made a Christmas record.
Any good?
Well, it starts off very badly because you know what he sings like? He sings like an angel, doesn't he? Okay. So track one is Walking in the Air. Now, imagine Keane doing Walking in the Air. That's not a great place to be, is it? But actually, it gets better and better. It's a really good listen. It's not quite as good as Tracy Thorne's Christmas record from a couple of years ago, but it is good. So anybody thinking of programming Christmas music, look there. The APAs are the latest event that many of us went to. I couldn't go. I don't think you went, did you, Brett?
I didn't know.
But Paul, and obviously you were part of the organisation of it. Well, let's start with Paul then. What sort of an event was the Audio Production Awards?
Wow, that has grown year on year on year. I remember going about 3 or 4 years ago and it was a lot smaller. It was also a lot shorter, I will say that. And I think Grace Dent had the line of the night when she came up to present the penultimate award and went, "I've been here so long, I need to shave my legs." So, Will, I challenge you to create the first radio awards ceremony that doesn't overrun by what felt like 3 hours. That said, it was good. I liked the entertainment. I thought the venue was great. I thought Trevor was great. I thought there was lots to cheer, and it's really nice to see the passion from the production side of radio and to see that being celebrated, because it was a lot of names that nobody has ever heard
that
of.
That was always the point of them when they were the RPAs. Yeah. Has that now become established? I'm hoping that it has.
Yes, I think so. And the love in the room for everybody there, the passion and the creativity in that room was amazing. There was a really nice line from Lauren Laverne, who was getting Best Presenter Music, where she was talking about she wished she'd got into radio sooner, because she said, "It's where all the lovely nerds are." I've been called many things in my time, but I'll take lovely nerd. It was meant as a compliment.
And fantastic to see someone like Dotnat Bayo win an award. He's been on the radio for so long on you know, different BBC networks. And I know he was enormously emotional about getting that award.
Well, people told me that Dotton's speech was the highlight of
absolutely
the evening.
Yes.
What did he say?
He said he'd never been honoured in this way before. He'd never won an award and was welling up. Still got still not emotional enough to miss giving his wife's work a plug, but it was a lovely emotional moment and kind of captured that excitement that we were rewarding somebody who, you know, does do some amazing creative overnight radio and might not be on the radar of other award ceremonies.
It's the Radio Today programme, December Round Table. Will Jackson is here, Paul Silvestri is here, and Brett Spencer is here. After this, we'll talk about, well, something else.
Hey, I'm Josh Collins.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mark Gale.
Hi, I'm Amber Stone.
Hi, I'm Stephen Daly.
I'm Sarah Hughes.
Hi, I'm Matt Shields.
I'm James Martin.
Hello, I'm Graham Torrington, and we're all available for your station today via voicetrackerhub.com.
Need a last-minute show covered? Or have a regular weekend show going?
CHR
Hot AC
Gold.
We've got you covered with top class talent from around the world.
Search according to formats and budget and contact presenters directly.
Find your remote radio talent today.
VoiceTrackerHub.com.
Actually, we won't talk about something else because Jez isn't here. We will talk about Radio Centre's photos. Okay. What a great initiative this is.
It reminded me a little bit of the distracted boyfriend photos, clearly of that. The other thing that was interesting about them is that on some of them it took me a while to spot where the radio was, because they're sort of hidden away in corners and things. It'll be interesting to see if they get used.
We should just say, what are they for?
What are they for? But it's because every time you see or you read about someone listening to the radio, they're often very, very old pictures of people listening to sort of antique radios and that sort of thing. So these are much more modern pictures of people listening to digital radios and listening to voice-activated radios. So just to give a different spin and make radio look a lot more modern.
I wish my life was like that. I wish my house was like that. I wish my car. I wish I sat there in an armchair with my feet up on a footstool with a cup of tea listening to the radio. Those people are beautiful. I think they're really good. And yet it's about time that we had new images for the industry to showcase how it is. I do think it would be good if we had some builders in there, though. Or somebody with a paint splattered radio. Somebody, yeah. A harassed mum with Lego in her hair getting in a car trying to bundle kids in. Or somebody with a bit of toast. And also, you know, somebody with sleep in their eyes and their hair all over the place. Because I think that's also a true reflection of radio. But I think it's really nice that we've got these new images. And I think Radio Centre are right to do it.
There's a picture of a family sitting having breakfast, I think. A mother and father and two kids, all happily laughing, listening to the radio. What station did they agree on? That's what I want to know.
It was Magic Christmas. Yes.
There's a great blog called Women Laughing at Salad. And it's happy women just enjoying their healthy lifestyle.
Brilliant.
And it was slightly reminiscent of that. But yes, absolutely.
Did they find out on Damien Green's laptop?
It was nice to
see. It's a very niche website, yes.
It was nice to see diversity celebrated in the pictures as well.
Yes.
Good. Well, full marks to Radio Centre for that initiative. Just going back to the APAs, Ed Miliband was there. Hoping for an award. He came second, not for the first time in his life. There's been a very interesting podcast. We've talked about it on this roundtable. Jeff Lloyd and Ed Miliband talking together about various ideas. It's called Reasons to be Cheerful. And this week, in an example of Pod Will Eat Itself, we had those two guys as the guests of Jane Garvey and Fee Glover doing their podcast, fortunately, where they talk to one another, largely it would appear, about bras. Did anybody hear this?
It was a lovely chat, a very warm chat, and it does feel in that sort of classic podcast way of eavesdropping on a couple of people having a lovely chat and some friends joining them, and it's very casually recorded in, oh, look, here's Jeff, and Jeff wanders up. They talked a bit about the Audio Production Awards and Ed's defeat. Ed's silver, I think we should say. And one thing I did learn from it was Jeff Lloyd saying, if you want to know whether you've won, decline the invitation, then see how much pushback you get about, well, we could order you a car. So I'll be trying that next time for one of these things.
I think both of those podcasts are two of the best podcasts of 2017. I think it demonstrates, I mean, Jeff is a master of the art, but also it really showcases Ed as a personality and as a warm personality. And I remember the first time that they met when Jeff interviewed Ed ahead of the election campaign, and you started to get that glimpse of who Ed Miliband is. And I think as an interviewer, he's incredible. I think as a person, he's got great warmth. And the Fortunately podcast to me is right now the best bit of audio content coming out of the BBC. I have learned more about hormone replacement therapy than I ever thought I would from Jane Garvey. But I think there is something brilliant about that. The one, again, a couple of weeks ago where Grace Dent was the guest and you learned about the MasterChef judging process. But it's also how they spot the people walking through the piazza at NBH and casually describe them and then call them over if they want to speak to them. So it was all of a sudden you had Claire Balding and Alice Arnold wandering over and joining in the podcast. And I think I would like to become a Fortunately podcast fan club member. And I think they should set up their own fan club where we all get badges.
Excellent.
And we all have events in a really nice wine bar together. Because I think it's just a brilliant example of the power of the podcast, but also what radio and conversation should be. Because it is just two mates and you are eavesdropping.
What's quite interesting about this, which we haven't touched on, is that it's not on the radio. It's a
exactly.
BBC, it's a BBC original podcast, which is not on the radio. And there's going to be a lot more of those. And I think this has set an interesting template for what the BBC can do away from, you know, a general Radio 4 or 5 Live slot in this sort of environment. So I think it's an interesting starting point.
Should it be on the radio?
It could be on the radio. But I think it feels kind of a bit more clubby. And I think there are certain things I can think of they've said that perhaps you wouldn't necessarily get through compliance if it was on the radio.
That's true. I think also there's another marvellous BBC podcast of the moment is Nick Robinson's Political Thinking. And I'm always disappointed when it stops. And I know why it has to stop, because it's also a radio show. And so when they get to 28 minutes, they have to go, well, that's all we've got time for. It's so disappointing. And what's one of the things that's great about Fortunately is just that it doesn't have to stop. It knows its own time. It can be 58 minutes or 38 minutes, and it doesn't matter. It made me think about, though, and we might come on to this when we talk about the podcast that some of you have chosen. Why is it that we still, when we produce radio shows, want to move them on so fast? Why are we always, as studio producers, saying, time to move on, keep that link short, it's time for the next item? And yet in the podcast world, there seems to be an appetite among listeners for something that's just that little bit more relaxed.
I think because when you're making a radio program, you're sort of, you're trained to put things, you know, put things in a script, in a computer, and have a running order and schedule and timings. And when you're doing a podcast, you kind of just think, well, we'll just record it and see what happens. And I think there's, yeah, that just allows it to have a completely different sound, and you're not limited by having to get to a news bulletin or a travel. It can run as long as it likes. So I just think all those sort of natural things that you do when you're making a radio programme, you can kind of let a lot of them go when you're making a podcast.
I guess I'm saying, Brett, would some radio be better if it didn't have those constraints that you were just discussing?
I think it would, but I think you also need the right presenters and the right producer to be able to get that.
The other thing is, if we had something like Fortunately happening on our radio station, I think we would call the presenters in and say, it was a bit in. We'd say, you know, you're not thinking about the audience enough. It was all a bit kind of self-indulgent. I've heard presenters and DJs spoken to like that, particularly if they have a zoo format. Why is it, do you think, on broadcast radio that that's wrong, but on a podcast it can work?
I'm trying to think of another example. I guess, for me, we have the Frank Skinner Show on Absolute Radio, and there are running jokes and running themes. But Frank does reintroduce and sometimes re-explain why that is funny and what that joke means. And I think listeners still love to be part of a club. And I think there is a real joy in being, in understanding the catchphrases, understanding the jokes, understanding the people. And I think it's rare for that radio to exist, but I think certainly, you know, looking at Frank as an example, we have built that show over 8 or 9 years, and Frank, Emily Allen and Daisy and John and Sarah, who work on the show, have built that as very much a club. We understand that when he talks about the readers, he means the listeners and the catchphrases that come. And it's a joy and it's a beauty to behold when he is in full flight doing all of that stuff. And I think you're right. I think it's lovely when it can, but we don't want to alienate people.
There's a very good example, I think, of this every Saturday morning on Five Live, when, because Danny Baker won't take part in the rest of the station, it appears to go away for a few minutes at a time, and then it kind of comes back, and he doesn't ever introduce the news or the travel or anything. It happens some miles away. And in a way, it just makes me challenge whether the way that we try and fit big personalities into radio schedules is always the right way.
But some of those talk radio stations, so I'm thinking of Ian Lee, who I listen to a fair bit, has a lot of regular callers, and they are the characters that form the rhythm of that show. And because he's got 3 hours of pretty free-form radio to play with, he can let those things develop and jokes run on, and sometimes maybe they run on too long. But that's part of that freedom of that late-night talk radio, and I think that's where that still exists to some extent. And it was interesting just to note that Paul talked about wanting to go for a glass of red wine. I think that's the sign of an engaging radio personality, that you think, I'd love to go for a drink with them because they'd have great stories and they'd be really engaging and they'd be good fun. And that really came across in the Fortunately podcast.
But also you think as well about the fact that, you know, that radio is still there. You've mentioned Danny Baker. I've talked about Frank. You look at someone like Steve Allen on LBC, and that is very much a club, and it's a brilliant club, and Ian Lee. So I think it's all there, and every station has got that show. It's just not necessarily where you would imagine it to be.
I think what you're saying is that you want unpredictability. And you know, I'm enjoying listening to Emma Barnett on Five Live, who I think is quite unpredictable in where that show is going to go next. But as we know, unpredictability is often very well produced.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So everyone's talking about voice-activated radio, and Jazz FM are slightly ahead of the pack. We've got the Amazon Alexa Dot here, and I'm just going to show you how good a system it is before we start. Alexa, Play the Radio Today programme.
Here's a station you might like. Laid-back classics from Amazon Music.
There you go. That's how good Alexa Dot can be. Alexa, stop. Alexa, stop. Go on. Alexa, stop.
You've broken Amazon.
Alexa, say stop. Great, it's the only language she understands. Right, Nick Pitts is here, content director of Jazz FM, our
Hello,
host.
Trevor. Hello.
Thank you for having us, as always. What is it you'd like to show us?
Well, I was just going to show you here that it works for Jazz FM by
I'm sure
saying,
it does. Go.
Alexa, play Jazz FM.
Hi there, I'm Chris Phillips from Jazz FM's Mid-Morning and Blueprint shows. And you found the home of the world's greatest jazz, soul and blues from the world's greatest artists on your Amazon Echo. Enjoy.
Now, why didn't it say, here is Jazz FM from TuneIn, which is what it used to say?
Well, the reason... Alexa, stop. The reason it does that is because we've bought the skill, we've bought the invocation, so we own Jazz FM in the English-speaking world. So what it means is we can fully control the content that goes through Alexa. So currently, anyone says, I'm not going to say it because it'll do it, so-and-so play something, it'll go through TuneIn, because that's the natural progression, that's the natural route that it takes. But what you can do is you can buy the invocation, you can get the skill set up, and at the moment it's a very simple skill, but the potential of what it can do moving forward, you can put your whole station catch up through it. So for a genre caster like us, where there's a lot of specialist programming in there, you can gain access to all of our special programs very easily through voice control.
That's very interesting. Now, Brett, you're a master of all things digital. Don't look at me like that. Is it true, as somebody told me last week, that it's better to listen through TuneIn than through the UK radio player because the bit rate's greater and therefore the quality is better? Is that true?
I don't know the answer to that, to be perfectly honest.
Okay. Is it likely to be true?
I would suspect the answer is that it's not true enough for the average listener to notice, if that makes sense. That's what I would say. Nick's going to contradict me now.
No, I'm not going to contradict you at all, but what this has allowed us to do is we've created a specific stream that is of the highest quality specifically for this, because, of course... when people connect using their mobile device or whatever, it all depends on their stream, the availability of their 3G and what have you. But this, of course, is in your house on your network. So you can give it a 320 MP3 if you want, or the highest quality you can possibly push through it. So it allows us to also manage that thing as well. So, you know, we have this one here. We've got a little dot. It's hooked up through our super-duper Cambridge audio system in the boardroom, and it sounds fantastic because it's a high-quality bitrate.
Will wants to say something.
Should we now all... Is there a land grab for these invocations? Should we now all be rushing out and grabbing, if there's something that's reasonably generic, like Jazz FM, that might be replicated around the world? Do we need to land grab those now?
That is part of our strategy, because... You know, we could wait, as with technology, you can wait until there is more available, but then actually at the end of the day, we won't be able to own it, especially, as you say, with something like Jazz FM. So what we've done is we've done that land grab. It's like the early days of the internet. You get your domain name and you sit on it. And that's half of what we're doing, but the other half is it's another platform to get Jazz FM on, and we want to control it.
And are you pushing people to...
Yeah, so we've changed just through the imaging of the station. We've got the news intro mentions it. We've got some promos, sweepers as well. The presenters are behind it. You know, it's very difficult to tell a listener how to do it, so we've bullet pointed it and made it really simple. So yeah, we talk about it on air. Why would we not?
Is it changing your life, Brett, having one of these in your house?
Yeah, I've got a Google Home, not an Alexa. And I was amused last night, by the way, when the television advert for Google Home came on and it followed all the instructions one after the other and went kind of crazy. But what's been interesting this year is we went into 2017 with it being, this is going to be the year of virtual reality, and that's not been the case, but it has been the year of voice-controlled devices. And it's amazing how quickly the entry price point has come down, because the Google Home launched in April, I think £129, and I've just bought a Google Mini for £34. So that's an enormous reduction in costs. And it's important for all of us, the fact that, you know, 67% of listening through these devices is to live radio. So that's an enormous boost to radio stations.
Christmas party tip: pin code your Amazon account because if you have a load of drunk people in your kitchen and you leave the room for 5 minutes, you might come back and find all sorts of things have been ordered on your account. I know this from bitter experience.
Alexa, what is Google Home?
Google Home is a voice-enabled wireless speaker developed by Google, announced on May 18th, 2016, at Google I.O.
Well, that's very generous of her, isn't it? Thank you, Nick Pitt.
Pleasure.
Very nice of you to come and join us. We were going to talk about the Student Radio Awards. Paul?
I thought it was brilliant. I think, once again, it proves that our industry has got a very, very good and bright future. It's another award ceremony that I really like to go to, because you can actually sit back and watch and really enjoy some people who are at the start of their career being super passionate, super emotional and really, really loving what they're doing. And I think, you know, for there was a lot of the industry in the room, and we're not there just for the kind of warm wine. We are there to look and to spot the next generation of talent, and there was some great talent in the room. And I think for me, what was brilliant this year was actually judging the Station of the Year award and actually listening to the entry from URN and how incredible it was. It was a world-class award entry. Whether you are judging student radio, whether you are judging the Radio Academy Awards, or whatever you were judging, it was a compelling piece of content, which was without question better than some of the entries.
And
that
why
I
was
heard.
It? Was that the range that they did?
It was the range of the content. It was the quality of the content that they were doing to start off with, and it was the way the award was made. And I think what makes it even better is the fact that they are going through people every year or every 3 years. It's not like what I would call a normal radio station, where you might have the same person making awards for 5 or 10 years with a really solid lineup, really knowing its proposition. This is a revolving door of people, and for them to continually do so well and to make something as good as what they're making, I think they should be absolutely applauded.
Will?
Can I entirely second that? There's a sort of panto tradition now at the Student Radio Awards, where the room is divided into those people from URN and everybody else.
Yeah.
And URN come on and everybody boos because they're the panto baddies that steal all the awards. I have to say, I've also judged and had exactly the same experience in a different category, that the URN award was head and shoulders above everything I've heard. And it was something that most student radio stations do, which is the union election results program. It was incredible. They had reinvented the union results program, which otherwise would be a very boring man going, as the returning officer for the students' union here at the University of Nottingham. They'd turned it into a Big Brother style production. They'd taken over the whole thing, put tension drones on it, let's meet the supporters of this candidate profiles, a big reveal. It was an amazing reinvention of how you do awards. The one thing I would caution against, at a time when we're trying to get a more diverse bunch of people into the industry, student radio is brilliant. I love student radio. You know, I did student radio. It was one of the best times of my life. But we have to also look outside the Student Radio Awards for the new talent, and look at places like Represent, Roundhouse and Radar, who are also doing amazing new things for young people, bringing them into audio content.
Good point.
And also throughout community radio as well.
Absolutely.
And there's a direct line for people that win these awards to become, you know, professional broadcasters and continue. I was listening to Jordan North just at the weekend on Radio 1, who won Best Male Presenter when he was at Spark in Sunderland, I think just a few years ago, and he's now there on Radio 1. So there is a direct line through. And how nice to see Global involved and backing these awards and being present. And if only we could sort of capture that spirit of togetherness for the other industry awards that we have.
All right, let's take a small commercial message and then come back and find out what our panellists have been listening to.
Phone calls, social media, SMS, email, codec control and visualisation through the same interface. Phonebox from Broadcast Bionics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
It's the Radio Today programme for December 2017. I'm Trevor Dan. We've got Paul Sylvester and Will Jackson and Brett Spencer. And let's go first to Will.
So I'd been listening to Ronan Keating and Harriet Scott on Magic. Relatively new breakfast show. Thought we'd give it a try. Been waking up with them for a couple of weeks and really enjoying it. There's a realness about it. Many years ago at GWR, people talked about the authentic radio personality. It was a big thing of its time. And I just think they're a couple of authentic people. They've got clear roles. It might have got off to a bit of a shaky start, but I'm really enjoying it more than I thought I would.
Paul, that show happens just down the corridor from you. What do you think?
I think Will's right. I think what's great about the show is the fact that there are clear roles. I think Harriet, who is a broadcaster who I've worked with, you know, many, many years ago, is a stunning radio craftsperson. She knows the craft of radio. And Ronan is genuine, is warm, is authentic, is really actually funny. And I think putting them together was a stroke of genius by Tony Murray. And I think what he's done is he's built a very strong production team around them in Alexandra and also Brian, who's a really experienced breakfast show producer. They know what they're doing. There is a clear goal. There is a clear ambition, and they are doing it day in and day out. They are really committed. They really want to make it work. And I know the benchmarks that they're aiming for, and I think that they're succeeding. But, you know, Ronan has brought his fan base to Magic and to the Magic Breakfast Show. Harriet is leading and controlling it, and also, you know, kind of being the ringmaster of the circus. And I think it's a perfect pairing. I think it's a genius pairing.
It's so much more interesting, I think, than the traditional, if I may say so, global breakfast show dynamic, which is basically the bloke doing everything and the girl giggling.
And even down to they get surnames.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch.
Yes. Good point.
I mean, I agree with everything you said, and it is great to see sort of, you know, Harriet driving the desk and being in charge of the show. But I wasn't sure why I would choose to listen to this rather than Jamie and Emma on Heart.
Shall we leave that one dangling? Because that's about personal taste, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
Paul, your first choice.
I we've mentioned the Frank Skinner Show already on the programme, and one of the triumvirate of the Frank Skinner Show is Emily Dean. She has started a new podcast called Walking the Dog with Emily Dean, and it's a brilliant concept. So Emily has a dog, she takes her dog for a walk, and along comes a celebrity with their dog. Now, you don't have to be a dog lover to love this, but it is a new way to do a celebrity interview or a comedian interview. And Emily is brilliant. She is naturally nosy, naturally inquisitive, and she's got an amazing context book. So you've got people like Ross Noble, you've got Jimmy Carr, you had Alan Carr, you had Sarah Millican. And it's just a brilliantly disarming way of doing a celebrity interview. And I think Emily is great at it. And you have that whole thing of, oh, God, we're lost. The dog's done something, I better pick it up. And so you've got this, you've got the narrative of the interview, but you've also got all this stuff going on because they're, you know, walking and talking, the dogs are barking, the dogs are getting chased, they're being turned away from a field. I think it's genius.
Here's a clip.
Well, I think you've done an incredible job with your kids.
Ah, you don't know them. See, that is me undercutting a compliment.
Is
but
it?
Yeah, okay.
They're really nice, kind, young human beings.
I think so.
Yeah.
I like to think the world is a better place for them, innit?
I think it is, definitely.
Which is all you can really hope for.
Yeah.
Come on, I might have to carry you.
Anyone else heard Emily Dean and her dog?
I listened to the Catherine Ryan episode on the way into work this morning. I hadn't heard it before, and it was really nice. And everything you said about being attracted by dogs and babies and that sort of thing. I enjoy Emily on a Saturday morning. I hope that when she sort of runs out of comedy mates, as it were, we get to hear her stretch a bit and do something with some other people who are outside of that comedy environment. Because I'd be interested to hear who else could be brought into that arena.
Let's have one of yours, Brett.
Well, I enjoyed Mark Kermode's Celluloid Jukebox this week on Radio 2. It's the second series. And it's Mark basically curating music, a series about music and movies. And the first episode last week was about concert movies. And he played some interesting things that I've not heard before. So he played a great version of ABBA's SOS by Portishead, which I'd never heard before.
Wow.
I'm trying to imagine that now.
I know. You can't imagine it, but go back and have a listen. It's absolutely gorgeous. And this week's second programme, which goes out, if you're listening to this on the day we go to air, which is Wednesday, which is tonight, the second programme is about pop stars that have become actors. But it's really interesting hearing Mark's commentary and the music he's creating around it. It's a really nice show.
My first choice is about sound on the radio. You know, it's been said before on this show, largely by me, that 99% Invisible is a fantastic podcast from America. And there's the current episode is called 700 Foot Mountain of Whipped Cream, and it's about advertising. It was basically about the history of advertising on American radio, and I won't spoil it by telling you why it's called that, but it's a particularly good piece, I thought, of programming and just curation of archive. I don't know whether anyone's managed to hear it.
Yes, I heard a bit of it, and it does sound very beautiful, and it's that thing that really lends itself to headphone listening, because there's a great deal of sort of sound design, and they've really created it very well, so it was a beautiful listen. I thought it was quite long, though. I think it was about 56 minutes, wasn't it? So I could have done it.
We like a bit
shorter.
Of length, though. We long-distance commuters.
Yes, but I've got 192 podcasts back, Trevor. I don't need many more 56-minute
right.
programs.
Well, with that message in our ears, let's move swiftly on and have Will's second choice.
I've chosen We Need to Talk About, which is a Spotify original podcast. And I think that's interesting just to start with, that Spotify are now producing their own speech content. Clearly, they're known for music, so this is an interesting development. I also have to shout out to last year's Indie of the Year, Whistledown Productions, who are making this for them. And it's Jolyon Rubinstein from The Revolution Will Be Televised with... An unexpected panel is how he describes it. So on this episode, you have Anna Soubry, MP, former host of Central News East, as I found out as well, Lolly Adefope and Camilla Wright from Pop Bitch. And Jolyon is an interesting host. He is very keen to please at the start and then sort of relaxes into it. But just having the juxtaposition of Anna Soubry and Lolly Adefope talking about things like Brexit, getting some very distinct views on that, and the light and shade of some easy jokes about Donald Trump's tweets on Time magazine into talking about whether there's an empathy gap over last week's bombings in Cairo that killed 300 people, makes it quite an unexpected listen.
It's going to be interesting where Spotify go with podcasts, because I'm not sure that people that go to Spotify are going there for podcasts. They're going there for music. And actually, they're quite hard to find as well. They don't work on my iPad, but they will work on my iPhone. They work in different ways on different devices, and they're not making the podcast available on iTunes. They're only in Spotify. So in terms of discoverability, that makes it quite difficult also. So it'll be interesting to see where this podcast strategy of Spotify goes. Clearly, it's about getting people to spend more time with them. Whether that's going to work or not, we'll wait and see.
Good point. Somebody was just saying that podcasts can go on a bit too long. Oh, it was you. Paul, you're saying George.
Somebody recommended to me episode 1 of Welcome to Wherever You Are, which is a new Radio 4 comedy, hosted by Andrew Maxwell, who's doing it live in London with comedians around the world. So what it is the comedians come together, Andrew interviews them, I guess you would call it, or there is a conversation.
Is it live?
He's saying it's live.
Well, that's
so
bold.
They're all linked in via Skype. So you had a comedian in Australia, one in LA, and also one in China. And it was brilliant because you had the jeopardy of, is Skype going to work? Can they see each other?
Have they not heard of IPDTL at Radio 4?
To which the answer was no. And then halfway through, the audience all cheered because they got to see the comic who they were listening to. But it's just great to hear stand-up comedy from around the world. And also, Andrew is a raconteur, but also his accent, his voice is so compelling to listen to that you're drawn into him and to his comedy. He did some work for us a couple of years ago on a couple of panel shows we did, and then he recently did Absolute Radio Live at the London Palladium, our big stand-up comedy night, and I think he is one of the most underrated comics in the UK. His Edinburgh show this year was stunning, was a 5-star sellout every night, and rightly so. He's been someone who's worked really hard on the stand-up circuit. So now to hear him making, you know, great Radio 4 programmes that he's the headline talent for is really pleasing. But it's a really lovely format. It's a really interesting listen. And technically, it shows how things can and can't work.
The first show of this went out the night of the referendum back in June of last year, and it's taken quite a long time for them to get a series on the air. But if you want to listen to this, if you download the Comedy of the Week podcast on Radio 4, There's 10 minutes either side of the programme with Andrew Maxwell explaining how it's put together and the technical challenges of it, and then afterwards what happened during the record in terms of technicals as well. So that's a really interesting way to hear it with the programme in the middle. And we should also mention that it's produced by Ed Morris, who's a top bloke and won Best Entertainment Producer at the APAs last week, which we were talking about earlier.
So that's Welcome to Wherever You Are. Another one from you, Brett.
Well, I'm going to talk about The Griefcast, which is a fascinating series presented by Cariad Lloyd, who is a comedian. And this is really about grief and loss. And there were about 10 episodes back in the summer, and it's just returned for a second series. Susie Wacoma was on the first one last week, and I think Robert Webb's to come in this series. And it's Cariad talking to other comedians about people they've lost, you know, parents they've lost that died young. And it's incredibly moving. I'm actually getting quite choked up just talking about it. And if you want a starting point, there's a really affecting episode with Amy Hoggart, who's a comedian whose father was the late Simon Hoggart. And she talks about every so often hearing his voice coming on the radio and that being sort of quite surprising and disarming. But the other interesting things I think about this podcast is I can't imagine conversations about grief by two comedians getting commissioned anywhere. I also don't think it would be commissioned at an hour anywhere, but also just as importantly in terms of podcasts, I hadn't heard about this when it was going in the summer, and all the things I've read about it and seen about it on social media have been since then. So it's an interesting example of sort of the long tail of podcasting, because I think far more people heard the first series once it was over than when it was on the air, and we're often quite quick to judge things sort of in the first two or three weeks, how many people were listening, how many people were downloading. I think this had a much longer tail. But it's a really affecting show and one of my favourite things, not just of this week, but of the year.
The David Baddiel episode is one of the ones that I've heard of that. And David was doing this at the same time as doing his show in the West End. And I went into listening to it, not really sure what to expect. And I chose that one to listen to. And I found it really uplifting. I found it really uplifting as a conversation, and I found it a human conversation. It's not one of your traditional interview shows. There are very few questions actually asked within the podcast. I think that is one of the skills that the host has. And I think you've got some great guests telling stories that you just wouldn't hear elsewhere on radio or even on podcast.
I don't know Cariad Lloyd. No, I don't know if anybody here does, but if she ever gets to hear this, thank you for making it. It's fantastic.
Well, that's The Griefcast. This has pretty much been the Radio Today programme roundtable for December. I just wanted to say that I would recommend that you check out something on Transom's website, which is a podcast called Avoiding Cheesy Sound Design. And it's absolutely brilliant, as you would expect from Transom. But they do teach you quite genuinely how to avoid cheesy sound design. And I hope you notice while you've been listening to the show that there's been absolutely no cheesy sound design.
I'm still on the hunt to figure out how sound design works. I want to know for myself and my own work, but also for students in my classes at Transom. Now, you might remember a few episodes ago on How Sound, I talked to Matt Boll at Gimlet, and I asked Matt to help me start figuring out sound design, to untangle some of the basics. He was incredibly helpful. We talked through a lot of sound design issues. I got a better sense of what works and what doesn't, but I still remain unsure. Something about sound design still eludes me. It still seems like some sort of radio magic that only audio wizards like Matt have figured out.
So that is about it. Oh, I wanted to say hello to Ian Dale. He of LBC turns out to be a listener to the pod. So thanks very much for your note, Ian. And yes, you can come on, and we'll see you hopefully in the new year. Any further business from Will Jackson?
Nope.
From Paul Sylvester?
All done.
From Brett Spencer?
If you have a chance, we're repeating Friday night's Music Night on Radio 2 on Friday, presented by Mark Kermo, the music of John Williams, and you can go online and do your own mixes of some of the John Williams soundtracks and turn bits up and turn bits down. We put it out earlier in the year, and there's a second chance to do that this coming
and
Friday.
And why wouldn't you want to do that? What a great plan. Now, this is normally where I'd say, here is Stuart Clarkson with the news, but he's told me that I'm to try an experiment today, because shortly after this podcast or this recording is finished, the Radio Today team is going to a public house. And Stuart says, why not bring your flash mic with you and I'll do this week's news in the pub? So what can possibly go wrong?
Thank you, Trevor. Well, Kelvin McKenzie is back
the former TalkSport and Wireless Group execs behind two new stations that are going to launch in London in the new year. City Sport going to be on AM and DAB. City Talk will be digital only. The Leeds-based digital station Radio Yorkshire's gone online only this week, coming off digital radio in West Yorkshire. The station says it'll continue its sport-focused programmes, which are broadcast from across the road from the Leeds United Stadium. There's another DAB Christmas station this week. Mince Pie FM is launched on North Yorkshire's DAB multiplex. It's from the team at UKRD station Minster FM. Move news, and Jarvis Cocker is leaving BBC Six Music at the end of the month. His Sunday slot's going to be taken over by Amy LaMay in the new year. Some changes coming to the weekend.
It's Amy LaMay, actually.
Is it Amy LaMay?
Yeah.
I've got no prawn guide on this script. Who wrote this? Changes are coming to some weekend network shows on Heart. Mark Wright's going to be leaving after 5 years. Jason Donovan departing after 10 years with the station. And some changes at Classic FM's weekend lineup as well in the new year. Charlotte Green and Alex James are off. In come Good Morning Britain's Charlotte Hawkins. She'll do Sunday afternoons. And the former Radio 3 breakfast presenter Rob Cowan, he's going to do Saturday nights. Rob was one of the original Classic FM presenters in the early 90s. Paul Gambaccini is heading out on tour across the UK to celebrate 45 years working in radio and music. An evening with the great Gambo, the professor of pop, has got 21 theatre bookings already for next April and May. And if you work in commercial radio news, you're probably interested to know that the entries have opened this week for the 2018 IRN Awards. The deadline for entries is the 16th of January.
Do try to concentrate.
Hang on, let me have another sip of this beer. Deadline is the 16th of January. The awards are taking place in March, and you'll find all the details at that popular website, radiotoday.co.uk.
Do you want another beer, Stu?
Get me another one now.
Excellent. Another London Pride.
Oh, yes. Another pint of that, please.
Don't you hate that when people just kind of ruin your big moment?
I'm trying to read the news of people interrupting.
Okay. Let's see if we can find someone else to do the big work of this podcast.
Okay, let's go.
By the way, you were great.
Thanks.
And Merry
Thanks,
Christmas.
Trevor.
Right. Emma.
Hello.
It's your job to say... Here's David Lloyd.
Here's David Lloyd.
Santa here. This is Christmas Radio Moments.
Over the years, many radio stations have moved home, not least the BBC in London. It's 5 years ago this week that BBC Radio News, including all the famous Radio 4 news programmes, waved farewell to TV Centre, where they'd been since 1998.
The World at One. This is Martha Carney with 45 minutes of news and comment.
It's 6 o'clock. Good morning. This is Today with Evan Davis and Justin.
It's 10 o'clock. This is The World Tonight with Robin Lustig. The first memory I have is of the very first programme I ever broadcast from here. It was brand new. I think we were the first Radio 4 programme to move in. And I had the great delight of broadcasting an entire programme with Radio 2 in my headphones.
On 88 to 91 FM.
I couldn't take the headphones off because I was doing some interviews with people who were in other studios, and in order to hear them I had to keep the headphones on.
I mean, I'd been in the studio before, and I'd come in and announce things breathlessly as a reporter with varying degrees of success over the years, but until you actually work here you don't get a sense of, I suppose, this kind of central importance actually of this one studio in all these programs. And even as I speak, Jim Nocte walks in, which, what could be further proof?
Now this moment when you're talking and the door opens, is that always happening?
Constant. Yeah. It was the most frightening thing when I first sat down here, my first day. I was quite worried about reading the headlines because you've got to fit them in around the pips, which, is, as listeners will know, we do with varying degrees of success. So I was quite nervous about doing that. And I'd got to the headlines and John Humphreys just got up and walked out. I thought I'd said something to upset him, but in fact, we do come in and out
all the time.
All the time.
And also,
yeah.
So I hear that when I listen. And also, you sometimes hear this on the Today programme.
Well, that's Jim.
Ah! Jim!
No, it isn't.
What are you doing when you're doing that?
Looking up things and writing.
It's not John. I mean, this is a serious point, actually, isn't it? It's not John, and you can be sure of that for one reason.
John is a technophobe.
Old plastic headphones. Yeah, I don't like looking like a sort of airline pilot. You can't hear anything at all, and you hear your own voice coming back to you. These huge headphones that encase your whole head, and I hate that sort of. The other thing that I don't have in front of me, as you may have spotted, is a computer.
Reflections from both Robin Lustig and from the Today programme team this week in 2012 as they moved across to an upgraded broadcasting house. When Chris Evans arrived at Virgin Radio, he seemed quite impressed.
I think Virgin Radio is probably the jewel in the crown of all of it. It has to be, maybe along with Classic. Both are representing different things, and I think it's really important. I think it's a bit unfortunate that we're deprived of being able to reach bigger audiences because of the quality of our signals.
In fact, he seemed so impressed he bought the company this week in 97. His consortium paid £85 million. The TV and radio empire was later sold for £225 million.
I mean, I paid for most of the computers and pictures on the wall and things like that. but I see, which I did. I used to come in to do the show and there'd be boxes of new computers in the hallway. And because I own the station, I'd be thinking, do we really need those? You know, and that's not what you need to be thinking, you know, just before you come and do a show. Nobody tell me no, which was that their mistake or was that my mistake? I don't know. But nobody ever told me no, which is one of the problems. You know, I had the keys to the sweet shop and I was eating all the sweets and then I wanted more.
Ginger Media, in charge of Virgin this week in 97. BBC Local Radio has just celebrated its 50th anniversary. Some stations were delayed going on air, like BBC Radio Stoke, where the aerial couldn't be mounted owing to foot and mouth disease in a field. But on the other hand, BBC Radio Brighton launched prematurely to cover the bad weather.
This is BBC Radio Brighton on the air for the very first time, over 2 months ahead of our official starting date of February the 14th. In fact, the weather conditions here are so severe and are having such a great and serious effect on our local community, it was decided that we would try and see if we could offer you an emergency service just at least during the period of severe weather. Two more areas are now completely cut off. We've just heard from East Sussex Police that both Rotting Dean and Salt Dean are completely isolated. They join New Haven and Seaford, which are also cut off.
An early dose of BBC Radio Brighton, helped by bad weather, as was Radio Leicester in the flooding of 1968. This week in 64 saw the first glimpses of a pirate radio ship which would generate programmes to influence the first sounds of Radio 1 some years later.
Jerry and the Pacemakers, that's the title one from their new film, their first film, Ferry Across the Mersey, and it's 29 past that big hour of 9 o'clock. We'll be coming your way today, right up until 8, test transmissions from Radio London, number one for fun.
Well, it's getting pretty close to news time, only 2 or 3 minutes away, but let's fill in that time until the news with the shadows. The shadows, of course, are currently appearing in a very important pantomime, Aladdin, with, naturally, Cliff Richard, who else? And out of that panto have come, quite apart from box office success, several excellent melodies, including this one.
How lovely to hear those excellent melodies. The early days of Pirate Radio London. Even the greatest radio stations mature with time, don't they? In recent years, there have been two unsolicited presenter calls on air which have hit the headlines. One was Saxgate, and the second was 5 years ago this week.
We have been told that this phone number is the hospital where Kate Middleton is currently staying. Now, we thought we'd give it a call. We don't want to cause any trouble.
Hello, good morning. King Edward VII Hospital.
Oh, hello there. Could I please speak to Kate, please, my granddaughter?
Oh, yes, just hold on.
Thank you.
Are they putting us through?
Yes.
The call from Mel Gregg and Michael Christian on the Australian station Today FM. The call went to the UK hospital where the Duchess of Cambridge was being treated. And let's remember that clip was going round the world with a combination of surprise and glee in the hours afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah. What was meant to be a simple prank call with very terrible accents.
Wow.
With the expectation of being hung up on. Has turned into something huge.
And then, as we recall, 3 days later, the nurse who initially put the call through committed suicide.
Did you have advice, legal advice, or senior producers nursing you through this?
Well, I mean, the call, to begin with, wasn't about speaking to Kate. It wasn't about trying to get a scoop or anything. I mean, the call was just... I mean, we assumed that we'd be hung up on.
The call that influenced radio worldwide this week, 5 years ago. So, with the trailblazing Absolute 80s replacing Extreme this week, 8 years ago.
Get ready for Absolute 80s, the UK's only all
greatest radio station.
Radio City 2 and Radio City Talk swapping frequencies 2 years ago.
Radio City 2, now on 105.9 FM.
And complete separation at last between Radio 1 and Radio 2, 35 years ago.
Happy Christmas.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
From BBC Radio 2.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.